It's funny, I was going on that thing about how sometimes, you know, like it doesn't, and like I was not actually believing what I was saying. You know? I was like,
second half of the season, once some of these prospects are stretched out a little bit, whether it's Luis Patino, Shane McClanahan, it's kind of like they're acing the hole a little bit. And
my friend Joey Jojo Jr. Shabadoo.
And welcome to episode number 197 of the Artificial Turf Wars, where we like our podcasts like we like our injuries, not serious. I am joined by the intrepid Joshua Howsam. How you doing, Josh?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm all right. You know, surviving, making it in the world. It was a cold day after a bunch of warm days. That's always kind of a downer, I think.
That's true.
I don't know how warm or cold it is in Florida, but it was the appropriate temperature for Kirby Yates to end his season, George Springer and Robbie Ray to hurt themselves far less seriously. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Thomas Hatch as well and his injury that we found out about on the last podcast and how all that trickles out of the roster. Joe Panic, will he be a Blue Jay coming up this season? We're going to tell you that late-breaking ha-ha story. Also, catchers. The Blue Jays have an unusual thing going on there. We'll talk a little bit about the end of spring stats as we roll towards opening day. Big question, I guess, is also, will the Jays play in TO this season? We have an interview because Kevin Weiss is locked on the Rays, and you should be too. We have potentially your questions. And a gold star for, of all people, Scott Service, whose voice I always hear in Harry Carey's rumbly tones for some reason. I feel like it's one of the names that Will Ferrell, when he does his Harry Carey impression, talks about Scott Service. Scott Service. Yeah.
That was a terrible Will Ferrell as Harry Carey.
Well, to do an impression of impression is an art form I have not mastered.
I didn't even bother trying because I haven't either.
All right. Well, one must practice to master things. There was a sound effect you sent to me a while ago, and then you sent me another one before the podcast today, so I shall endeavor to satisfy your urge to hear it. That's not nearly as upbeat as the Kirby sound effect you gave me the first time. What's that one, Josh?
That's the game over one.
No more Kirby. I mean, game over would have been okay in the sense of like he was finishing games for us, but he's not going to finish anything. He's just going to collect a paycheck and go nurse a dead arm.
Yeah, it's not what you wanted. So apparently the Jays were well aware that there were risks there. We found out later from Ken Rosenthal, I believe, that the Braves had a $9 million deal with him, which they backed out of after seeing concerns about his elbow. And the Jays originally had agreed to $8.5 million, and they changed it to $5.5 million with incentives after seeing those same elbow issues. So it was a gamble that they took that he was going to be fine, because if he's fine, he's awesome. He wasn't fine.
Quite the opposite. He was not. Quite the opposite. Yeah. Didn't even get to opening day to explode. Yeah, I guess if they knew the elbow was a ticking time bomb, I would almost rather it go off. If it's going to go off at some point during the season, I feel like before opening day, you might as well, because then you have as much time as possible to look to see what happens, to reshuffle things in the bullpen and who your ostensibly who your closer is going to be from the get-go, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to be able to get more out of the guy, even if it's like if it makes role changes, but from a perspective of guys being able to settle into a spot, I think it definitely there's some truth to what you're saying there, where it's like, okay, well, now we don't have to go with Jordan Romano being a setup guy or whatever. He's going to be, well, likely going to be the closer, and he can prepare to be the closer.
Yeah, and I think you know, and if it turns out he's not a great closer for one reason or another, you can play with the pieces you have and see if you can come up with something, or you can try and trade, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that's neither here nor there. I feel bad for Kirby. I do. I think it's always crushing for a guy who is trying to make a good impression and trying to ensure a future paycheck to have his body betray him in such a way.
Yeah, I feel bad for him, especially because, you know, Kirby Yates is 35, so, and he's going to miss all of this season and most of next season, considering he had the surgery at the end of spring training. His career might be done. I mean, I hope for his sake that it isn't, but it's not likely that he's going to be in demand going forward.
So in the far less career-affecting sense, we had a couple of other less severe injuries that nevertheless kept players out of the lineup. We have George Springer, who had a grade 2 strain of the, was it oblique? Or no? Yep. Yes, oblique again. The oblique, as we know them in the vernacular. Apparently, he's just having trouble loosening up. This is grade 2, though. Grade 2 is not good.
Yeah, so it's kind of odd. So typically, a grade 2 oblique strain keeps a guy out for about a month, if not more than that. And Springer, they're saying, yeah, he might be ready for opening day, because like they were shocked to see that it was a grade 2 based on the way he was describing his symptoms. So, you know, I it's hard to say that he'll still be back that quickly, because they're not going to rush him back just to make the first series or whatever. You know, it's like they can play just fine without him. I mean, they still have Grichuk, Teoscar, and Lourdes that can play the outfield. So they can withstand a short-term injury for Springer, and I think that they'll do whatever they can to make sure it's not a long one.
And I think that in terms of having him compensate for the injury, or, you know, do something to change his approach, because he still has a nagging injury, is something you got to stay as far away from as possible on a guy you just signed to a massive 5-year contract.
6 years.
6 years. Oh, man.
Yeah, so... And also, it's like a week, a guy being out for a week, when you have depth to handle that spot, it's like you can, it just makes way more sense than saying, okay, well, maybe we cannot have him out that week, but there's a risk that he's out for 2 months because of that. I mean, like, of all the times when you should say George Springer, take the time to come back, is when your other three outfielders are still healthy.
Exactly. And then Robbie Ray, who had been having a fantastic spring, non-baseball related injury category. We finally got one in the Jays spring camp. You know, it was bound to happen.
Yeah. There's always a weird one somewhere. He fell down the stairs while carrying his child, which could have been a lot worse, and not for Robbie Ray. Thank God his kid is okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been worse for two people.
Yeah.
That was that his throwing arm or his non-throwing arm?
Oh, it's throwing. He banged up his pitching elbow.
Lead with the other shoulder, Robbie. So that I assume is like bruising. There's no break or anything involved there. Have they given a timeline for him?
No, but he's day to day. He's gonna skip a start and then they'll see from there. But there's no expectation that it's going to hinder him even going into the season. It's just, you know, he bruised his elbow. There's like, you don't want him to pitch with a bruised elbow or pain in his elbow, because he might do something weird.
Yeah, and he might miss other pain because he thinks it's something that's related to that injury. So, yeah, you want to clear everything up. I was clutching my pearls over Thomas Hatch last week, and we finally got the diagnosis of the elbow grabby removed from the game injury, and it's not as bad as maybe we thought it might be.
It's funny. I was going on that thing about how sometimes, you know, like it doesn't, and like I was not actually believing what I was saying. You know? I mean, I was partially believing it because there was evidence of it being the case with Osuna, but, you know, I still expected bad news. So I'm very happy that it's just mild elbow inflammation.
So yeah, Thomas Hatch on the shelf, but not on the 60-day shelf or anything like that. So I think that's, you know, another asset that the team can look forward to getting back sooner rather than later, which, you know, if this team is going to be as competitive as a lot of people seem to think, was it Buster Olney who was going on this week about all the things, but like he did his sort of Blue Jay tweet storm?
Or was it John? I don't follow Buster Olney anymore, so I have no idea.
Yeah, but one of them was basically running down all the things about the Blue Jays, and he was quite bullish on, you know, on Ray and on Matt's. Semien, you know, he went over the whole thing. He didn't really reveal any areas of weakness. And I would have to think, unlike, you know, the lackluster appearance of Corey Kluber, and the, you know, some of the other potentials. The Jays haven't, other than Kirby Yates, had a big hole be revealed in their plan, although they are obviously still a little shallow in the pitching department.
Yeah. On the pitching side of things, it was interesting. Atkins actually came out and said that they're going to start, you know, picking up the intensity of their trade discussions. Now, people have been expecting them to try to make a move for a pitcher at some point during the season, but it sounds like they're trying to do it now. You know, it's like Pearson got hurt, Hatch got hurt, Ray should be fine, but you know, it's like he still got hurt. Yates is out for the season. And, you know, if you can maybe make a deal with someone at the end of spring training, I mean, there's no harm in trying it. I don't expect it to happen. I think they'll go in with what they've got, with a five of, you know, the same starting five that it has been, with Ryu, Ray, Mats, Stripling, and Roark, until the other guys come back. And, you know, just have to not throw Stripling and Roark in that first series against the Yankees. So it's like three lefties against the powerhouse right-handed lineup of the Yankees, or Stripling and Roark. It's kind of like damned if you do and damned if you don't.
The imperfect solutions with limited resources problem of baseball. Yeah, I don't like it any more than you. I think there is the danger of one of Stripling, Ray, or Mats turning in back into a pumpkin, so to speak, right? That's so to have all three of them in the rotation at the same time is kind of like,
so just... Yeah, I was never too worried about Ray or Mats be turning, like, going, being bad, because other than in 2020, which was the weirdest year ever, neither of them has ever been bad. Just, you know, they you can't expect them to be necessarily good or, like, you know, above average, you know. Like, you know, Mats should be a four type ERA pitcher. If he gives you better than that, great. Same with Robbie Ray, but like, they shouldn't be the gigantic black holes they were last year. Stripling, I'm less convinced on, just even though he has a better track record than those two guys, but just stuff wise, it's harder to understand how he gets the success that he does.
Maybe you'll comb through some numbers in the next couple of weeks and convince yourself. So what does all this shuffling around mean for the pitching side of the roster?
Yeah, so I think that the biggest impact is that a guy like Trent Thornton, who is healthy and he pitched the other day against the Yankees, I think it was, he's probably going to make the bullpen. I thought for sure he was going to be rotation depth, but with Stripling now shuffled into the rotation, and Yates being out, which moves the late inning relievers guys back a step, they need someone to fill some bulk innings if they need to. And none of the pitchers who are really vying for jobs, except maybe Julian Merriweather, can do that.
Bullpen's the most flexible part of a roster. Whether that's a good thing or not, we remains to be seen in this case. Do we talk about Joe Panik?
Yeah,
I mean, this is the big breaking news of the day. It says 5 hours ago on my tweet. He has been informed that he will make the opening day roster, although he will not be added to the 40 man until another day or so. I'm assuming some other transactional thing has to happen to make room for him.
Yeah, well, so one roster spot will surely be taken up by just transferring Kirby Yates to the 60 days injured list. But it depends. I think if they're adding guys like Tim Mayza and Francisco Liriano, both of whom are on minor league deals, then they'll have to decide who goes and who stays, and maybe that can be involved in their trade talks right now. So I think that that's why they're waiting. But he had an opt-out in his contract of today, so they had to tell him, hey, you're going to make it, so he wouldn't take it.
Yeah. So, I mean, good for Joe Panik, I guess. I don't think this... Is this the best case scenario out of all the backup infielders?
The best case scenario.
This is a scenario. And for Joe Panik, it's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Panik is fine. I mean, thankfully the infield right now is healthy. I think that if someone gets hurt, then he's not the kind of depth guy you want to be stepping in every day, but if you have to play a couple days, he won't kill you. you know, he takes good at bats. He doesn't hit for any power, but he draws walks and stuff like that. So I think it's fine as a backup fielder, especially because they have Semien, who can slide to short if you need it. So they don't have to worry about a backup shortstop.
Right. So what does the opening day infield look like right now?
The opening day infields is going to be, I think, Vlad at first or Rowdy, one of them, the other one at DH, and then Semien at second, Bo at short, and Biggio at third with, you know, Panic filling in if they do weird late game stuff for defensive purposes in the outfield. So I don't think it actually affects anything. I don't even think that Springer's injury really affects anything with this lineup, other than instead of him out there, it's Grichuk, which, you know, it looks a lot like what they had last season, which is just fine.
We're going to make it more fine, though. The one position you didn't talk about there, because I didn't ask you to, but was catcher. There is an Alejandro Kirk situation, isn't there?
There sure is. And so one of the interesting things about these injuries is that if Springer has to go on the IL, it makes it easier for them to carry three catchers going into the season, because then you have Kirk as your platoon DH with Rowdy. And then that way you're not exposing Reese McGuire's to waivers. Reese McGuire to waivers until a week into the season, when it's much more likely someone will clear, because most teams don't, they've set their rosters by that point.
Yeah, and the shuffling should be mostly done. And unless there's some weird injury, nobody's looking for that other catcher right off the bat.
Yeah, and, you know, the reason for that, that this is even an issue, is because Alejandro Kirk has to make the roster. Like, he has to. He's been way too good, and he's been Robbie Ray's personal catcher. Four starts in a row. We said it was three last time when we talked about it. And you just don't have a guy being their personal catcher to Robbie Ray if you don't want that guy catching him in the regular season. Robbie Ray's tough to catch. You kind of want whoever's going to catch him to be getting practice when it doesn't count.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've telegraphed this move a long way. Someone mentioned that they actually sent a nutritionist or a trainer to Kirk's home over the winter. I don't think you do that for your average minor league prospect. Like, that's a big, hey, we're going to invest some time and money here in making sure that we can see you on the big league team.
Yeah, exactly. And he did lose a lot of weight. He's still a big guy. I mean, that's not going to change, but he's not as rotund as he was entering last year. And I think that, you know, any kind of shape, better shape that he gets into with his bat, it's like, he's going to be a key guy.
Yeah. So who are the other key guys as we leave spring training? I took a quick scan of the stats, which again are massive grain of salt, but it looks like Marcus Semien and, Vlad Guerrero are continuing to reach base, you know, in these games as we go. And then maybe Bo Bichette is coming around.
Yeah, he's definitely better. He got a couple home runs in the other day. And one of the interesting things about that is, like, so he hit both of them to the opposite field. And one of the things I think that's really interesting about the Jays young players, Gurriel is the exception to this. He's a very pull happy guy, but Teoscar, Bo, Vlad, Rowdy, they all have really good power to the opposite field, which makes them a lot harder to pitch to, because, you know, if you can drive the ball the other way and pull the ball with power, it's like, it really closes up a lot of gaps. And I think that's one of the nice things to see. As you know, Teoscar was very pull happy when he first came up, but he definitely has been going in the other way a lot more last year and in spring training this year so far.
I think someone pointed out to Teoscar that he absolutely hits the ball far enough to not worry about what direction he's hitting the ball.
Yeah. And well, there's an interesting a heat map that I'll post it. When we post the podcast, that it was the difference in where he's hitting the ball since coming back up in 2019 versus prior. And he's really driving balls out over the plate a lot better. Whereas it used to be everything was that he hit for any authority whatsoever was like inner third.
Yeah. I mean, the guy has a monster amount of lift and velocity in his swing. I think sometimes players don't recognize that. Maybe as they mature, they're doing something, they don't realize they're still doing something from when their body wasn't, you know, 100% developed or whatever. But I mean, every home run I remember from Teoscar feels like a moonshot.
Yeah, I mean, he has elite power. I mean, just the raw power and game power. Like, he does get to it. And, you know, for him, it's always just been about whether he would make enough contact. And, you know, that's still an open question, but he's obviously been doing enough of it for the last year, essentially, that there's hope that he's going to be able to keep doing that. And, you know, so as long as the guy's not doing it, like, he's doing what you want him to do.
Yeah. I mean, if that OPS has been in the 900s pretty much ever since he returned from the minor. So you can criticize him for striking out a lot, but I don't think you can question his position in the lineup.
No.
You know, he's consistently one of the best overall power hitters, you know, and he hits enough that, you know, he's not getting an 800 OPS because he's got a sub 200 batting average and doesn't ever walk. He's got enough pieces to play every day and to be right in the middle of that, the heart of that lineup. But again, we've talked about this a lot. There's a whole bunch of guys who can be in the heart of the Blue Jays lineup right now, and it's very tough, especially with Kirk in there on the right days, to see the hole in the lineup.
Yeah.
So the last question, we know the Blue Jays will be playing this year. We know they will be playing in Florida. Will they be playing in Toronto? It's still up in the air.
Yeah, it sure is. So Mark Shapiro came out and he said that he thinks that with the vaccines and like with players getting them, especially, that they'll maybe be able to be back in Toronto for July. Kind of, he didn't specifically say July, but basically sounded like that's what he was thinking. And then Canada Public Health, or the Public Health Agency of Canada, put out a comment which basically said, nah, hold your horses. You know, it's multiple paragraphs long, but ugh.
Yeah, we are the deciders, is what the health authorities will always tell you. Yeah. You may have ideas, but we have the answers. I don't know. I'm okay with sports being one of the last things that people worry about in terms of getting vaccines and making people safe.
Well, I think the idea wasn't that the players would be rushed into vaccination. It's just that the schedule for them to be vaccinated sounds like it's going to be in the next month or so. And then after that happens, that theoretically the idea was they should be able to come. But the public health agency was saying that, like, there's not enough data on whether people who are vaccinated can still spread the virus, even if they can't. You know, contract the disease.
Does everyone in the Blue Jays organization get a vaccine, or just the players on the field?
I assume it's the players, but also people that are in the United States. So, like, the Blue Jays employees who live in Canada and work in Canada will not get vaccinated.
Yeah, no, I'm just kind of like, so you have a clubhouse attendant and someone who takes care of the, you know, the uniforms and stuff, all those kinds of things. And as well as, you know, someone who talks to the players and makes sure they have whatever they need in the hotel, all those kind of people, right? It's like, yes, the players are vaccinated, but how far in context do you go to get people vaccinated all around them, if that's the magic bullet for having them back?
I mean, but given the way the vaccines are going in the United States, it seems like those people will probably also be eligible for vaccines in the next month. I mean, a lot of states in the U.S. are already opening it up to everyone over the age of 16.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I hope this isn't actually a problem that I have to think about at any great length.
Yeah. So anyway, it doesn't sound like it's going to matter. So
no. Well, what we're going to get right down to here is that the Blue Jays will play in Toronto one day again, but first they will play in the Trop, as much as I hate to admit that. Yeah.
Not as a home park.
No, but they will play there. And we're going to talk to Kevin Weiss of Locked On Rays about what it's going to be like facing Tampa Bay in this upcoming season. In the sunshine of your love. I'm with you, my love. And we are pleased to welcome to Artificial Turf Wars, Kevin Weiss of Locked On Rays. Kevin, welcome to our little program.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it. Also, I love the name of the podcast as well. Very creative. That adds a little punch to it, for sure.
It could have been a Rays podcast. You could have had the title, and it would have been the only other major league team that would have been applicable for.
That's true, and that's what I thought it was originally, that it was just totally a Rays-related podcast. But really, really cool from that standpoint.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. So we'll dive right into it. We're going to try and cover the big points of this offseason for the Rays, in which they are coming off a World Series loss. Oh, I wish I had that kind of problem as a Blue Jays fan. So Charlie Morton and Ian Snell are not going
Blake to... Blake Snell.
Blake Snell. Man. This week has not been good for names.
That is not the first time that's happened, by the way. That has happened before, where people confuse Ian and Blake Snell. I think there was... Maybe a guy with, I don't want to disparage any media outlets, but like ESPN or Fox, some big media outlet like called Blake Snell Ian Snell, like right after he'd won the Cy Young. And it was a huge snafu. Of course, the local fan base got all upset and everything like that. So, yeah, kind of two different categories of player, I would say, Ian and Blake.
Yeah.
Well, my excuse is that I've been horrible with names all. This is probably the third or fourth time in this podcast I've gotten a name completely wrong. So that said, losing those two guys, how hard is that going to be for the Rays to overcome?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a big loss for sure when you're talking about, I mean, for all intents and purposes, your number one and number two, at least two of your top three pitchers from the past two seasons. And a lot of it was money related, and also some of it the fact that, you know, Blake Snell has had his injury issues in the past, and Charlie Morton's not getting any younger. And there was also, I think, some, I don't want to say bad blood, but there were the wheels were kind of turning that Blake Snell, it was probably good for a mutual change of scenery between him and the Rays. Just all that had gone on in the past year between some of his comments he made about salary and the Rays trading Tommy Pham and him bringing on Scott Boras as an agent. And then we all know about game 6, of course. So it just kind of was like, all right, this might be a good kind of separation point here. And basically I think there's also sort of a line of thinking, you know, they've traded Charlie Morton's $15 million salary for four pitchers. I mean, basically for his price tag, they were able to bring in Chris Archer, Michael Wacha, Rich Hill, and Colin McHugh. And a lot of those guys have looked very good throughout this spring training. And you would expect, really, those four guys combined to give you at least 400, 450 innings, maybe more than that. And what's Charlie Morton going to give you at max this year? Maybe 175. So the Rays kind of looked at it from the standpoint of, we just need guys that can give us innings and help us throughout this grind of 162-game season. This isn't a 60-game season. We're basically tripling what we have going on there. And why pay one guy that's 37, 38 years old that struggled last season at times $15 million? But when we can add four guys, and if, you know, two of those guys work out, then it might end up being beneficial. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see Chris Archer or Michael Wacha maybe get some votes for comeback player of the year, something along the lines. And then, of course, you have the maybe veteran and leadership component and savviness of Rich Hill and Colin McHugh. Colin McHugh is maybe more of a bulk guy there. So, you know, those definitely are big losses in terms of name recognition for sure. But I think the Rays will, at the end of the day, be fine with the pitching staff. I mean, there's so much depth on this team. Of course, Nick Anderson will be out until the All-Star break. That was not a very fun headline to read, you know, as we're trying to get through spring training the last week and a half here. But it's really just moving guys up the peg. That just means more saves opportunities for Pete Fairbanks and Diego Castillo and maybe Ryan Thompson and so many other guys. I mean, the Rays don't really have necessarily a true number one closer. I mean, they set a record really last year with the amount of guys that got saved last year. I think they ultimately broke that record, 12, 13 different guys that were able to get that. And, you know, I think they'll be fine in the interim, but really there's a lot of guys that the Rays can throw at you and a lot of guys that'll get you different looks. I don't know if there's a guy on this team that will get to the 175, 180 inning mark, but you could, by the end of this year, see maybe a dozen guys that have given you at least 100 innings or so. And there's also, you know, the other consideration too with deciding not to bring back Charlie Morton and Blake Snell is the Rays have some really good budding young prospects that you can't really just keep those guys and wallow those guys in the minors for much longer. I mean, Shane McClanahan, his time is basically now. Joe Ryan, he's on the come up. Brent Honeywell, he looks to finally emerge. Brendan McKay is out there. Joe Ryan, the list goes on and on. Josh Fleming wants a more pronounced role this year. So there's a lot of names out there that are kind of knocking at the door. It's really sort of one of those good problems to have. And also, you know, I know this is kind of a long-winded question. The Rays didn't get anything in not picking up Charlie Morton's option, but the Rays got a really, really good haul with the Blake Snell trade. It was almost, I think, if we look at this in hindsight, a couple of years from now, you'll be like, wow, the Rays really got something here with Luis Patino, Cole Wilcox, Francisco Mejia, and a very much needed top catching prospect, or one of the top catching prospects in Blake Hunt. That is something that the Rays have really, really needed to do, is to bolster their catching depth throughout the minor league system. And they basically added two catchers and two pitchers to two big live arms in that trade, and also saved a bunch of money at the end of the day too, because they don't have to pay the remainder of Blake Snell's 3-year, $39 million deal that's on the table. So, you know, they might take a little bit of a step back this year, but I think at the end of the day, long-term, they'll be better off for it.
All right. Well, I guess you covered the entire pitching staff there, so we don't need to continue on that one. One quick one. So with the outfield, right? So Austin Meadows is back. Obviously, Randy Arozarena had that great debut last year. How do you think the playing time is going to shake out there? Because you got Brandon Lau, Kiermaier, Phillips, Margot. I mean, there's a whole bunch of names that could be vying for playing time. I know the Rays like to mix and match, but are there guys that you think are going to be more left out in the cold a bit there?
Yeah, you know, we say this every year where, and again, this is another one of those good problems to have. There, you have a lot of really good outfielders that are fighting for playing time, but, you know, there's always a guy that goes down with an injury. Something happens. Like, Brett Phillips is going to start the season on the injured list, and he's kind of a fringe last man on the bench guy. He's not really a guy that's going to, I don't think, play a ton of innings. And I know, you know, game five heroics aside and everything, but he's not an everyday player. He's really, okay, we need a defensive specialist in the late innings. We need a guy that can pinch run for us. We need a guy that can maybe lay down a bunt and get on base. That's about the extent of what he can do. Now, he plays really good defense too, but I would not necessarily want to see Brett Phillips get 450, 500 at bats in a Rays uniform. But, and then Kevin Kiermaier, I mean, let's be frank, let's be honest here. He's, 30, going on 31 years old. He came into camp. He's already got, I think he had some hamstring tightness. Now he was dealing with a hip issue. What I'm trying to say really is he doesn't stay healthy for a full season. Like the last time it's very rare that he's going to be out there for 140, 150, 160 games. So you can expect, and that's just the nature. He is getting a little bit older, and the nature of how he plays the position and how aggressive he is for diving for balls and running out grounders, just everything he does, he goes 110%. That's what he does. And that kind of lends itself to being more prone to injury. So there might be a time where I would put a prop bet on it that he will probably be serving an injured list stint or two before it's all said and done. But, you know, that's the good thing about playing in the American League is you have the DH and you can rotate guys around and give a guy a day off his feet and still bat. And that might happen with Randy Arozarena or Austin Meadows. Like, you know, defensively, you'd most likely want to see Kiermaier and Margot out there. And then, you know, I guess Meadows, I mean, well, Arozarena probably, I mean, if you're looking for your best defensive outfield, it'd probably be Arozarena, Kiermaier, and Margot, and then Austin Meadows playing DH from there. But he's going to get a lot of time in the corner outfield spot as well. So I think they're going to rotate around a little bit. And there's also going to be times where I think Manny Margot spells or platoons Kevin Kiermaier in center. And I really don't see an issue with playing time all that much. Now, the big question was, you know, it kind of sort of will work out for this team going forward because, I mean, the Rays, they're going to start the season with three guys on the injured list. I mentioned Nick Anderson, Brett Phillips, and G-Man Choi. And I bring up G-Man Choi, who is going to be out for a little bit there because Yoshi Setsuga, who also plays corner outfield, he is now learning to play first base. So he's kind of, I guess, for now going to be a non-factor in the outfield, and the Rays plan to play him extensively at first, maybe DH him a little bit. He can also shift over to third if need be. But, you know, I guess you're really sort of looking at four guys for three spots, but really it can be four guys for four spots because you have the DH, and you don't want every guy, especially on that. I mean, like your podcast is named The Artificial Turf. You don't necessarily want a guy out there, 162 games on the turf. You want to give a guy a break, a breather, a rest every now and again. So, and these guys, I mean, they play for the Rays. They know the drill. They know the playing time situation. So it all works out in the end, I think. And I don't think it'll be a big issue. And then, you know, if they really are in dire straits, if Kiermaier goes down and Brett Phillips is still on the mend and say something happens to Austin Meadows, they've always got, you know, Josh Lowe, who's waiting in the leagues in the minor leagues that they could turn to as well. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think it'll all work out for this team going forward for sure. And, you know, they can play the platoons a little bit with, you know, Randy is a righty, Meadows is a lefty, Kiermaier's a lefty, Margot's a righty. They'll figure it out one way or the other.
Yeah. You know, I'm just going to cut right to it because as Blue Jay fans, I think a lot of us have the same sort of thing on our minds, which is the Rays always seem to have the momentum of a runaway freight train. And we want to know, why are they so damn good every year?
Yeah, that is a good question.
Well, long pause.
they win a lot of games at the margins. I think that's what it is. They win a lot of close games and they mix and match so well. And they are kind of the team where they invent or revolutionize how to do something and then other teams will copycat that thing. But the team that started the way of doing that thing is ultimately better at doing that thing. For example, the platoons, the shifts, using the opener, putting more weight on the bullpen than the starting staff, not having starting pitchers go three times through the order. And they're really masterful at all that. And, you know, as far as last year's team, this year's team, and going forward, I mean, they've got a lot of depth and they got a lot of guys that can play. You know, this team doesn't necessarily, I don't think, they don't have a ton of superstars. They don't have a ton of top level talent. Like as far as recognizable names and guys that are superstars, the Rays don't necessarily have that, but they have a lot of versatile players who are just, you know, the Rays might not be, you know, their top players 1 through 5 might not stand a chance with the Blue Jays or the Yankees or the Red Sox, but their players 15 through 30 or 15 through 40 on the 40 man are probably better, or that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to be better than those other teams. So it's really, you know, they don't have the big time all-stars and everything like that, but they get it done because they have the guys like Joey Wendell, for example. Like, he is just a really good player that can play all over the diamond and does everything right. And he doesn't get a lot of pub. And I think that's one way that they go about it. Same thing with Mike Brosseau. And, you know, I think a lot of that is sort of tied into it. You know, it's hard to explain sometimes, but I look up and down this roster and I don't see many weaknesses right now. I just see a lot of depth. I don't necessarily see a ton of all-stars, but I see a lot of really good ball players at the end of the day that are finally, you know, that's something with the Rays is they're constantly shuffling guys in and out. And right now, I mean, they're basically keeping their entire lineup from last year. And I think that continuity is definitely valuable and impressive going forward this season, assuming that they can stay relatively healthy for sure.
All right. So all of that, and this is the part where I ask the truly difficult question. All of that adds up to, at some point, they finish off the season in the division. How many games are they going to win, and what position does this team manage to finish in the American League East? Tough question to answer.
Okay, very good. Yeah, good question. You know, I could see the Rays sort of maybe starting off a little bit slow. Heck, they actually did start off slow last year. I think they were, I want to say 0-5, or they were 0-5 in their first road trip. I mean, they really stumbled out of the gates and then finally got things together. And I think that second half of the season, once some of these prospects are stretched out a little bit, whether it's Luis Patino, Shane McClanahan, it's kind of like they're acing the hole a little bit. And once other teams are really dealing with the issue of finding enough pitchers and trying to get through the dog days of summer, and it's a game of attrition, that's where the Rays can, and they're like that little engine that could, and they finally pass you at the end of the day. But I see the Rays finishing second in the division, making a wild card spot. And as far as games won, I mean, definitely at least 90 games. I would say probably, you know, between 90 to 92 games. But I'll go ahead and say 92 games. I definitely don't think this team is, you know, going to continue on the pace they were last year, where if they played a full season, they were on pace to win 108 games. I mean, when you stretch that out over 162, too many other things happen, and the way the ball drops and goes, like, it's just, that's just not a feasible thing to happen. And I think that the Rays maybe take a little bit of a step back this year, but ultimately will be better for it for what they've done this offseason in 22, 23, 24, and beyond.
All right. Well, you have given us a lot of names to go look up that Blue Jays fans might not yet be familiar with and may learn to hate in the near future. So thank you, Kevin, for dropping by. What is the Twitter handle for the folks who might want to stop on by at your Twitter?
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Locked on Rays on Twitter.
All right.
You can
also check out the Locked On Rays podcast if you want to hear more of Kevin's wonderful voice. Is that a weekly show for you guys?
We are daily, actually.
Daily.
So Monday
That's
through Friday.
Amazing. Yeah. I could not do that. I would die.
Well, hey, it makes it easier when there's going to be baseball on every night, so there's something to talk about. In the off season, we drop back to 3 days a week, but yeah, right now, all through regular season playoffs, we are daily for sure.
Three days a week during the offseason is impressive.
Locked on Rays,
yeah,
folks,
we really
every day.
We do a lot of fun things, and we try to be creative. But here it's just basically talking about the action, everything that happened the night before, and kind of looking at ahead at the game. So that's a good thing about the baseball season, is there's something on every night.
All right. Well, thanks for stopping by, and we got to get going. But we appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again.
Of course, anytime, guys. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Have a good one. When a soul is just a ride. Amen.
Just a ride. And there you have it. A little Tampa Bay action. I probably shouldn't hate a team that has figured out how to do things better with less money, but I still do.
Yeah, we just do. Like, it's the way it is. I mean, it probably comes from, you know, constantly losing there and against them. But, you know,
probably.
It's a thing.
Probably. You know what? We have a question, and we did ask late. So it's this one isn't on you, folks, but we're going to take your question right now.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Yeah. Here we are.
It is repeat the question, by the way.
Could we repeat the question? Okay. That would be Matt Thomas at Thomas Matt C. The baby penguin is back. Hypothetically, because pigs will fly before this happens. But what has to go terribly wrong or terribly well to see a guy like Simeon Woods Richardson or Alex Manoa in the big leagues this year.
Alec.
Someday I'll get it.
We actually did get another question from Socko McTaters, but we answered that in the first part, so we're not going to read that one.
Also, Socko McTaters does not look terribly happy in his profile picture.
Yeah, but I look like a giant chicken in mine, so I don't know how much stuff you should put into those.
I don't know if that's really Socko McTaters. Well, I mean, obviously, no one is really Socko McTaters, but nevertheless, he looks like he's not enjoying being on Twitter. Actually, maybe that's how I look when I'm reading Twitter all the time. Not
by the
happy.
Way, it's going to turn out that is his real name.
You're going to get an angry tweet. My
like
from
The Simpsons. My friend Joey Jojo Jr. Shabadoo.
I'm Guy.
Jojo, come back.
I'm Guy Incognito. Oh, man.
Okay, well, we've gone way off track here.
Yeah, okay. So
the question from Matt.
Alec Manoa, will or Simeon Woods Richardson, what are the odds?
Well, I mean, for the going wrong part, I think it's pretty obvious what it would have to go wrong is that literally all the pitchers get hurt, but they're still hitting well enough to be competitive so that they rush those guys. But the going right aspect of it, if the Jays are in it late in the year, especially with Manoa, I could see either of them, honestly, coming up and pitching out of the bullpen. Because, I mean, look what Manoa has been doing in the spring. I mean, he's just striking out everybody because short bursts, just throw hard and throw sliders. I mean, that's a major league closer. So I could easily see them making a late season appearance in the bullpen if things are going well. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I would actually put money on it happening as long as they perform in the minors.
I think there is that factor of no one really knowing what ramping back up to a 200 inning season is going to, or nobody's going to throw 200, but like 150 to 180 inning season from last year is going to do to a lot of these pitchers. Maybe not injury specifically, but maybe their fatigue is going to be a factor for some of these guys. So what would go wrong? Maybe on the outside, maybe they're really contending, like they're right at the top of the division and somebody has to take a few starts off and you're looking and going, could we get something out of Simeon Woods Richardson? Could we get two starts out of Alec Manoa? I can dream, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then also we have an unusual gold star.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
No.
That just seems silly.
No.
What? Here are the rules.
It's so unusual. It sounds like people asking us questions.
I think that's rather brilliant.
So I did good, right?
I mean, I would have thought you'd get a gold star.
You enjoy that. You've earned it.
That feels better. I think we gave a couple of gold stars very reluctantly to Trevor, I am a kind of crap human being who has the occasional good idea, Bauer.
I think only gave him one, but yeah.
Okay, but this is your chance to give a gold star to someone trolling Trevor Bauer. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the other day in his spring training start, he gave up three bombs, huge bombs, and five innings in his last inning that he pitched, which was the fifth. Five runs, rather, in his last inning. And he said, quote, "The fifth inning, there wasn't really any thought of sequencing or whatever. I was just throwing pitches. That's not a really good mind frame to be in when you're trying to get guys out, but I was just finishing off the night, trying to get my pitch count up." First off, literally everybody rolled their eyes at that and didn't believe a word of it. But the gold star goes to yeah, the gold star goes to Scott Service, however. He said, quote, "No, our guys are hitting with one eye shut for the first four innings. We are also trying to breathe through our eyelids as we are focusing on different things that will help us throughout the years." I just want to make sure everybody understood they weren't trying the first four innings. Oh, so good.
Oh, man. And Scott Service, for those of you who don't know, is not generally known as a guy who gets riled up. But Trevor Bauer managed to rile him up to the point where he just went off. It was apparently a long series of answers about how, you know, the fifth inning was where it was really where they were starting to do stuff. And the only reason that Bauer was successful in the first four innings is because they weren't bothering to try.
It's so good. I love it.
Yeah.
It's just perfect. Especially like the little, you know, like the, obviously the jab about the other thing, but you know, also some classic baseball movie references there.
Yeah.
Well, one.
One Bull Durham reference. Any truly troll-worthy answer must have one baseball movie reference in it, and I think he filled that without even hesitation. Yeah, he met the quota without even blinking. So good on you, Scott Service, because more people should call out. Well, I mean, they should call out some of the really awful things about Trevor Bauer, but you know, more people within baseball should call out the fact that he is a bit of
a piece of crap.
Yeah, overly impressed with himself. He's it's too much. It's too much. Yeah. So there you go. That is the very brief questions and gold star section of the podcast, which rolls us in to near the end. And near the end of the podcast, I ask you, sir, do you have a final thought?
Yeah. So we were talking about the bullpen. Sorry. And I mentioned Liriano and Meza specifically. And one of the interesting things that I saw, Scott Mitchell was tweeting about this, that someone told him that Meza's sinker has looked Zach Britton-esque this spring. Now, you kind of have to take any comparisons to Zach Britton with a little grain of salt, even though we compare Ryan Barucki to Andrew Miller. but there's really no questioning the performances that Mays has been putting on this year. I mean, he's just been absolutely dominant in the spring. And, you know, he's got 5 strikeouts and 4 2/3 with 1 walk. I mean, that's not a lot of innings, but like, what else are you going to do and to ask for other than no hits? And, you know, he still throws hard with power stuff from the left side. And I don't know, it could be a nice addition to the bullpen, especially if Ryan Barucki has to be moved into more of a specialized late inning role with Yates being out.
Interesting thought. I think I have nothing this week. I'm a blank slate in terms of final thoughts. So I'm going to move to the fact that you are Joshua Hausam at Joshua Hausam, and I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010, and our guest was Kevin Weiss of Locked On Rays, and this has been Artificial Turf Wars, episode number 197, and we'll talk at you next week.